happen with yourself? Local news and alternative views. I know. You don't know. I know what I need to know. You don't know enough. I read news on the internet. You don't know local. I check into Facebook a lot. You don't know facts. I watch television news. You don't know in depth. I read the local newspapers. Better, but you still don't know background analysis, the real voices of the newsmakers. Then what should I do to really know local news and alternative views? You need to listen to the new WHFR Journal, broadcast live Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m. on WHFR 89.3 FM, or get their podcast from www.whfr.fm. So, now I'll know.
Some of America's bravest warriors are returning home wounded. Here's one of them.
My name is Norberto Lara. While I was on a combat patrol, a rocket-propelled grenade took my arm off at the shoulder. I was discharged from the Army, and I've been working with the Wounded Warrior Project since 2007. You don't have to be severely wounded. A lot of guys have post-traumatic stress disorder. Being able to share your story kind of helps you wrap your mind around what did happen over there. My name is Norby, and yes, I do suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, but I'm okay.
Don't suffer in silence. Contact WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Let us keep the lighted torch of hope burning. Walk with Focus Hope on Sunday, October 9th at 12:30 p.m. to celebrate the legacy and memory of co-founder Eleanor Josaitis. Bring your family for a commemorative day of food, entertainment, and children's activities. Register at www.focushope.edu or call 313-494-5500. That's 313-494-5500.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is John Ventry. John is the Pennsylvania State Director for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. And John will be speaking at the Pennsylvania State UFO conferences in October, which he is sponsoring. We'll talk about that event a little later in the show. And he will be presenting, on his book, The Day After 2012. The book delves into various end-time prophecies from Hopi and Biblical to Edgar Cayce and Gene Dixon. And John says, if you think these are the bad times, wait until 2013. So here to tell us about the upcoming Pennsylvania UFO conferences is Mr. John Ventry. Welcome to the show, John.
Yeah, thank you, David. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. And let's talk a little bit about that October Pennsylvania conference.
Yeah, we have two conferences scheduled. This is our fourth annual UFO conferences. We do Philadelphia and then Pittsburgh. And what we got scheduled this year is in the Philadelphia side, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, October 14th through 16th, we have our UFO conference. Friday night is just a cocktail hour for anybody that's local or even staying over for the weekend. Then Saturday, our lineup includes the big names, let's say, are Linda Moulton Howe. She'll be speaking along with Bill Burns, who we all know from UFO Hunters, myself, Bill Weber, who's one of my state section directors and was on your show, I believe, last week.
Yeah, last month.
And Joe Mara, who lives up by State College. So we have five speakers. And then after the conference Saturday, there's a dinner with the speakers. And the speakers from both days will be, you know, at the dinner. And you can pick, if you want to, sit at a table with the speaker of your choice. Mm-hmm. And Sunday's lineup includes Robert Dean, George Filer, Dr. Lynn Katai, Jerry Jonas, who's a local reporter in the Philadelphia area, and Chris Augustine on abduction. So we got a real good lineup there for Philadelphia. It's, you know, basically a two-day conference with a cocktail hour Friday night and a dinner on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's in the, like, Northeast Philadelphia. It would be the location at the Sheridan Hotel. Mm-hmm. And you can view either conference on MUFONPA.com. Would be the best way to view it. And you know what's interesting, David, is that comet Elenin that's passing by is actually going to be the closest to us and the brightest on Sunday. So Saturday night or Sunday after the conference, if people bring their binoculars or a small telescope, they could try to view comet Elenin, which is passing by that night.
Comet Elenin. Now, I've heard some things about Comet Elenin, in that it's supposed to really disturb the Earth's core or the magnetism, affect the sun, whatever. What have you heard about that?
Well, or is it just a comet? The typical rumor mill that usually starts when something's discovered. But, I mean, there are some strange things about this comet. You know, it wasn't discovered, by, and this is what I find interesting, it wasn't discovered by our Project Space Guard that's supposed to be viewing the sky for near-Earth objects and comets and meteors. We didn't discover it. It was discovered by a Russian astronomer. And I don't know if this is his real name. It's Leonid Elenin. He's 29 years old, and, you know, there's a significance to Leonid, you know, and then to Elenin. If you remember the movie Deep, what was it, Deep Impact?
Right.
Ellie was the name of extinction-level event.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting that that's the guy's name, if it's his real name. But the truth of the matter is, this comet's a little smaller than Hale-Bopp. It's going to be 22 million miles away and actually 2.5 million miles off of our plane. So it's going to be 2.5 million miles above us and 22 million miles away. So it's really not, you know, it's not going to do anything, I don't think. But you'll be able to see it, they say, with the naked eye. Mm. Or if you have a telescope or binoculars, I think you'll be able to see it. But, you know, so that's the story on Comet Elenin.
When is that supposed to be visible again, the date?
Yeah, that's actually the date of the closest it's going to be is on the dates of our conference, October 15th and 16th, with the 16th being the most visible date.
I mean, hopefully it won't be overcast or cloudy.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and then, you know, the Philadelphia area, there's a lot of light pollution, so it's going to be hard to see.
Yeah.
But you know what I find also interesting? What, the fact that Project Space Guard didn't find it and a Russian astronomer did. You know, we turned, well, I guess SETI right now is turned off, but I don't have a lot of faith in SETI. I think they're a front for NASA and part of the government anyhow to make us think that something's being done. But you also have, there was another satellite that was turned off that used to allow amateur astronomers to view bolides and objects entering the atmosphere. That was turned off about a year ago also. So, you know, it kind of makes you wonder. I mean, Elenin's not going to do anything. But why aren't we finding it when we have the telescopes, the satellites? We're missing these asteroids. And you'll even see where, you know, one's discovered 3 days out and it comes fairly close. We're not finding these, and we should be the ones finding them, not some Russian astronomer, you know?
Well, you say we're not the ones finding them, but Do we ultimately see them? Do we ultimately acknowledge the fact that they have passed us?
Yeah, actually, we do. But it's someone else that's actually the one first that comes out and says this is out there.
Okay,
and it really makes you wonder. You know, with all of the doomsday prophecies, for some reason, we're not doing our job as far as watching the sky as a country, or maybe we already know that something's coming, we're trying, you know, our policy is not to panic the people.
Right.
So we won't tell you anything,
even
if it's imminent. And I think that's pretty much the policy. Really comes out of the Brookings Institute, you know, how to handle the whole UFO phenomenon. It's really not to tell people and don't panic them.
Right, right. Now, I can't give you the date or the name of the asteroid / comet. It was an asteroid. But quite a while back there, some astronomer announced to the world that this asteroid was heading for Earth and is going to be perilously close to Earth, possibly even hit Earth. And everybody panicked, and then all of a sudden he said, "Oh no, it's going to be way out there. It's going to miss us," which it did. And this was days before, and now they say, "Well, we don't know about these things until after they've passed the Earth." Well, wait a minute. How come they knew about that one in advance?
Yes.
Which leads me to believe, and I think this is what, in effect, you're saying. Correct me if I'm mistaken. Putting words in your mouth, but. Is the fact that they do know they're coming. They just don't tell us until after they passed.
Absolutely. And you hit it right on the head. If they know about this Elenin this far out, and they know about these other asteroids and comets, they know. I mean, we monitor everything. We know. Mm-hmm. And the asteroid you're talking about is Apophis, which passes by every 7 years, and it gets a little closer and a little closer and a little closer.
Mm.
And it was supposed to have a 1 in 30 chance of hitting us in the future, but then like once JPL got involved, they recalculated, and it's going to miss us by millions and millions of miles. But on Friday the 13th, April, Friday the 13th, 2029, it passes by closer to us than our satellites. That's how close it passes by.
Wow.
And they're so certain it's going to miss.
Hmm.
I mean, do you realize how close that is? You can see a satellite, right? Sometimes you can see a satellite go over. They're 26,000 miles from Earth. This thing is going to pass by at 22,000 miles, and it's going to be so close that our gravity will change its course for its next go-around.
Well, now, judging by how far it's been or how close it's been in the past and how close it's going to be calculated, estimated to be in 2029, the next go-round, should it be passing on the other side or should
it? Well, that's what they're saying. The initial estimate was that it had a 1 in 30 chance of hitting us, and then they changed it to 1 in like 250,000 chance of hitting us, and it's going to miss us by a lot. But you don't know what our gravity is going to do to it, and that's the issue.
Mm.
It could nudge it a hair. It could nudge it by a mile. We don't really know. And you know, even in space, all it's got to hit is a little pebble out there, and that will completely change its trajectory and how it comes in.
Yeah.
And the good thing, though, is, at least for us, is the way it's coming in, it's actually supposed to go over to Yucatan Peninsula, and if it hits Nigeria is the trajectory on it. But, you know, the thing that bothers me, though, is that we're kind of pretending like we're not tracking these things, we're not allowing people to use the satellites that are there, and we're not... We're trying to keep everything quiet right now. And then, you know, maybe I'm a little paranoid or I wrote these 2012 books, but, you know, we're $15 trillion in debt. The states are another couple of trillion. And I say to myself, maybe it doesn't matter. You know, we can just go out and keep spending money and keeping everybody happy because they know something's coming. It's pretty clear they're not telling us when something's out there. And when you look at how much debt we have, maybe it doesn't really matter. It's just monopoly money right now. You know, it's a crazy thought, but maybe.
Hopefully, this is This is a theory on your part, John.
Well, I wrote two books on it, so who knows?
Really? Yeah. Oh, I hate to think that's the case.
Yeah, you know, that's a strange thought I had, is that this is all a big joke. Come whatever date it's going to be, you know, Congress and whoever they select, the CIA, FBI, they're going to all be in bunkers, and we're going to be sitting there looking up saying, hey, what's that thing coming at us? And by then, it's going to be over with.
I didn't. Those who have a depth perception problem, they would say, I didn't think it was getting closer. I just thought it was getting bigger.
Yeah, and you will feel the heat, that's for sure. Because actually, they say with large asteroids, at the point you can see it and actually see the brightness of it, you know, you'll be burned. You'll be incinerated.
Oh my.
Upon entry, that is. You know. All right, let's go to our second conference since I set the tone with the first one. You know?
Let's end this by saying we can't worry about that.
Yeah, we can't worry about
we
it.
We can't worry about it.
It's in the future. I'll be retired next year this time, so I don't know if I'll get to enjoy a lot of it.
We got our grandkids to think about and all of that, so we can't really worry about it because, if what you're saying is true, then it'll be a blink of an eye and we won't know about it anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I tell you what, in researching a lot of this 2012 stuff, I am absolutely convinced at this point that we're not the most advanced civilization that's ever been on this planet. You know, I believe, like the Mayans, where they said it's on a cycle, and a lot of other cultures said that too, the Chinese, what I Ching, the Hopi, they say it's on a cycle. Mm-hmm. Now, the Mayans never said anything was going to happen. They just said we're on this 25,800-year cycle. But just think about it. What if every, 25,000 years, 50,000 years, the planet goes through some sort of a change, whether it's a asteroid strike, a pole shift, a super volcano? I think it kind of cleanses itself with a catastrophe, and then those that are left, I mean, it only takes a couple of weeks, and you're going to be, you know, like a feudal society farming and trying to live, you know, if you don't have power and you don't have any energy. In a couple of generations, people forget all the technology you had.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you think about the Roman Empire, when it collapsed in 276 A.D., it took 1,000 years to get to the Renaissance and just start to come back after that. And it was no catastrophe. It was just a collapse of a government.
All right.
That's so, right. You know, I really wonder if we get to this point every time, you know, it's almost like Groundhog Day. You get to this point and then something happens, throws us back into being cave people, and then you have to work your way all the way back with technology again.
Well, that's pretty much what the theory on Atlantis is that, you know, we had more in Atlantis, they had more technology than we have today. And then whatever it was, the many theories as to what happened to it, it just, you know, it sank, and there were a few that escaped to Egypt and wherever, mm-hmm. and used their knowledge to build the pyramids, whatever. But all of that technology was lost in Atlantis. Now, whether or not you believe in Atlantis or the existence of it or it ever existed, pretty much what you're saying is the same thing.
I agree with you 100% on that. I think that's exactly what happened. You know, Atlantis sunk. It was volcanic activity or earthquake, whatever it was. Mm. It was an archipelago chain of islands, and it sunk. And those people that were on ships were all that was left, and they went out to different directions. And that's why you see, you know, the Mayan structures and the Bolivia, you see those temples. Those people couldn't have built that. I mean, the one in Bolivia, the stones are 3 times larger than the ones in Egypt, and we don't know how they moved those.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have stones in, I think it's Baalbek in Jordan, that are 1,200 tons. We can't move them today. No. How did those people put them in place?
They talk about these rollers and putting straw down and no oil.
Yeah, right.
And you know, that sounds good on paper, but when you try to do it in practical, it can't be done.
No, it can't. Yeah. You know, and that's why when you start to, and that's a presentation I put together actually for next year's conference called UFOs in Art and History. And obviously I'll be done with 2012 come next October's conferences. So this is what I got ready for next year. And it really goes into the history of UFOs in art, in paintings, in literature, and then some of these old structures that are built. And, you know, really proving that we didn't do this. I mean, this UFO issue has been around forever. And yeah. And I really believe that, you know what? When I wrote my first book, I referenced the Planet of the Apes. And do you remember how the apes, the simian leaders, would not let Charlton Heston bring forward? He found that doll and humans were there first and able to speak, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the same thing with today. I mean, whatever our true history is, they won't allow it. They won't allow us to know.
Yeah.
And I believe we've gone through a couple of cycles on this planet, and we just have to keep coming back. And that's why you find humans 100,000 years ago. You know, they find in coal deposits that are 250,000 years old, they find vases, they find jewelry, gold chains and ornaments. Now, how could they be there 250,000 years ago in a coal deposit? Who put them there?
We've only been
modern for 10,000 years. How's that possible?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, creationists say that it's 6,000. The Earth's 6,000. The universe is 6,000 years old. And you say, well, we find these bones, dinosaur bones, and all of these relics that are thousands and thousands of years old. And the answer, their answer to that is that, you know, I'm not knocking them, but I'm just saying that their answer to that is that when God created the earth 6,000 years ago, he put them there. He put those old bones there. I don't know. I apologize, but I'm not buying it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there, I have always had a doubt, too, with carbon dating. I know carbon dating is only good for 30,000 years, and then I guess there's some other system that's used, radioisotopes or something. Mm. There's a different system used. But, you know, we could be wrong with that, just you know, all our physics principles obviously don't apply in the rest of the universe. I mean, our carbon dating or whatever isotope dating could absolutely be wrong. And maybe we've only been here 6,000 years. Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, when you think about it, just think about what I think I saw in China or somewhere a year or two ago. They found a dinosaur. It was in a, and it was still had the skin and the meat on it. And they were able to tell that it, whatever, it had colors or it had feathers to it or whatever. And I said to myself, you're telling me for 65 million years this thing's been laying in a bog marsh and it didn't deteriorate? And you start to wonder, well, maybe it is 6,000 years and not 65 million, but who knows?
Yeah.
But I think somebody does know, but I don't think they're going to tell us anything that's going to alter what we were taught in school.
No, and when evidence does arise to contradict our worldview or a scientific worldview, it is hushed up, the same way with the UFO phenomenon. I'm going to have to take just a minute here to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, out of Henry Ford Community College here in Dearborn, Michigan. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Pennsylvania MUFON State Director, Mr. John Ventry. And I also want to take the opportunity to mention the October, well, John already mentioned October 15th and 16th this year, 2011. Bill Weber, who was on last month, George Filer, who George and I have written, co-authored a book called Filer's Files, Worldwide Reports of UFO Sightings. So, and, of course, John Ventry will be there, and Linda Moulton Howe, and many others. So that'll be at the Sheraton Four Points Hotel at 9661 Roosevelt Boulevard, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19114. And you can call for information on that, 215-671-9600. 9600. Then on October 22nd and 23rd this year, 2011, Stanton Friedman, everybody knows who Stanton Friedman is in the UFO community, Bill Burns, who for History Channel's UFO Hunters and publisher of the UFO magazine, John Ventry will be speaking again, Michigan State Director William Konkoleski, and of course yours truly. I will be there speaking, and so that will be at Westmoreland Community College at 145 Pavilion Lane, Youngwood, Pennsylvania, 15697. And for more information on that, you can call 724-925-4000. You can go to MUFONPA.com. That's MUFONPA.com for information on both events and registration information. And I hope to see some of our listeners there. So, John, back to you, John Ventry.
Yeah, well, you know, we also have the dinner scheduled after the Saturday conference where the people can sit with their speaker and have dinner. And Sunday in Pittsburgh is Bigfoot Conference. And, you know, what I noticed was the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, they used to have conferences, and they would draw 500 people to their conference. And so I asked them, I said, why don't you let me manage it for you? And we'll put it on Sunday after the UFO conference. And they agreed to it. And so MUFON is going to manage it for them. And I think we're going to get a really good turnout for the weekend. I've already got, I think, 50 pre-advance orders, people staying over for the two-day weekend, going to the dinner. So I think it's going to be a real good weekend with UFOs and Bigfoot and a dinner with the speakers.
Now, is that the October 15, 16 or 22, 23?
Well, both of them have the dinner with the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
The Philly conference is all UFOs. The Pittsburgh conference is UFO Saturday and Bigfoot on Sunday, on the 22nd and 23rd.
Okay, good. Very good. Yeah, you know, I think I'm like most UFO investigators. I kind of put off the Bigfoot phenomenon as something zoological. What is the term for that?
Cryptozoology.
Yeah, cryptozoology. And so, you know, I can't dabble in everything. I'm interested in the paranormal, ghost phenomenon, what have you. But, you know, my specialty is UFOs. So
yeah.
I didn't dabble in that. And then the more I investigated, the more I find that Bigfoot and other creatures like that involved in cryptozoology, it does have a connection with the UFO phenomenon. There are many, many cases where Bigfoot is seen where UFOs are seen at the same place, same time. Is there a connection?
Yeah, and Stan Gordon actually is going to speak about that. He's speaking both days. Saturday is going to be on UFOs. Sunday is going to be on Bigfoot.
Mm.
But he's got a couple of cases where they, you know, where a Bigfoot was spotted and there was a UFO in the area, and the person claims to have shot at it and it just kind of evaporated. But the strange thing is, when they went to the area that the UFO was hovering, it was real close to the ground, just a couple of feet over off the, you know, off the ground.
Mm.
The people that walked into that circle where the UFO was got delirious. They got sick. They collapsed to the ground.
Mm.
And they had to actually take the guy and drag him out of that area and get him away from there, because they said he started, like, making funny noises, and he was, like, completely delirious when he walked into that area.
What happened to the people who went in to drag him out?
Well, apparently it didn't affect them. You know, but it was this one guy that really affected, you know. So he tells a real good story regarding that. So, and, you know, I read something else, too, that, you know, we think of UFOs and everyone thinks that they're from outer space. But, you know, they might not be. They might just be another dimension. They may have always been here, maybe another culture that developed, you know, under Antarctica, who knows. But then I read something that says, you know, there could be a paranormal side to all of this. And, you know, like MUFON that I belong to, doesn't want any connection with the paranormal. We even kind of shun cattle mutilations and crop circles. We want to stick with the strictly scientific aspect of UFOs. But, you know, the more you look at this stuff, how do we know there isn't a paranormal connection to UFOs, to ghosts, to Bigfoot, you know, to all of that, to, you know, the evil spirits like exorcisms? I mean, the church acknowledges that exorcism is real, you know, and they also acknowledge, the Catholic Church, that there's life in space. And, you know, they've had a couple of meetings on it and statements that there's life in space.
Yeah, I think the Catholic Church is trying to get ahead of the curve.
Absolutely, because either they know something, and they probably do, figuring that we better change some of our stances on this, because when it comes out, we're going to have a hard time explaining it.
Yeah, and this way they can say, well, I told you that back in 2000. I just didn't come right out and announce it, but I hinted, I suggested that they're space, you know, they're all creatures of God, and you know, they are, so...
Well, you know, you kind of hope that other institutions would jump on that bandwagon a little bit, you know, that the media or, you know, some acknowledgement from the Air Force or a government, you know, something saying that, you know, we do believe that it's real. There are enough documented cases, but we just don't know where they're from. But, you know, actually, when you go back to General Sanford and some of those others, you know, some of the older cases from the 50s and 60s, let's say, I mean, they did, they said that UFOs were not a threat to our national security. So you're acknowledging they're real. And there's plenty of documentation where it's acknowledged as a real phenomenon.
Yeah. They're just not, they claim that they have not attacked us. However, we have lost a lot of Air Force pilots and planes when we attack them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did shoot you ever down read Frank Frischino's book with Stanton Friedman?
Had him on
about 1952.
Had him on the show.
Okay, good. Yeah, so you're familiar with, I mean, it's really interesting stuff that we lost almost as many pilots over the U.S. in training missions than we lost in North Korea. How's that possible?
I mean,
we lose one stealth fighter or one F-22, they shut the entire program down for 6 months or 2 years before they even started up again because of safety. But back then, we lost, whatever it was, 63 pilots in a one-year period over the U.S., training missions. That's not, just doesn't make sense.
And it happened to be the around the year that they were told, if they don't answer your hail, shoot them down.
Yeah, and that was the order, shoot them down. And it was right around the, you know, the two sightings over Washington, D.C. in July of 1952, and, you know, resulted in September with the UFO crash over in Flatwoods, West Virginia. And I've spoken down there at their conference a couple of times. So, you know, 1952 was a... you know, we talk about 47 with Roswell, but 52 was really the year that was more important as far as ufology goes, because that started MJ-12. It's, you know, with them getting together to talk about it and the memos with Truman. Right. It started Project Blue Book. I mean, it really started the policy and the investigations on UFOs, and, you know, MUFON came out of that because... In 69, when they said they weren't going to investigate UFOs anymore because it's not a threat, you know, that's when MUFON stepped in and created our own private organization doing the job that the Air Force said they're not doing.
And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And we got to do their job for them. And then they do everything they can to muddy the waters and put out disinformation. Every time a good case comes out that's well documented, all of a sudden, somebody's claiming, I hoaxed that. You know, the old Doug and Dave from England about the crop circles. That was us. We hoaxed them. We hoaxed all the crop circles all over the world all the time.
Yeah. Even from the 1800s.
That's right. That's right. We were very busy people, and then they were asked to duplicate the crop circle, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah. But, you know, that just shows how simple, how easy it is to influence people. And if you give them any explanation that sounds plausible, they just accept it, forget about it, and move on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was telling somebody at work today with this whole UFO phenomenon, how you can't get anybody really, it was actually my neighbor I was telling, you can't get the media, you can't get universities, you can't get anybody really excited about this, you know. And I said to him, can you imagine if the statement came out, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, that HIV and AIDS, there's no such thing. No such thing. All it is anemic conditions and the flu, and it just every time somebody says they're sick with it, you just say it doesn't exist. You know, or you could take another example. You know, if you say if police investigate rapes, the officer will be suspended. And every time there's a rape, you say it didn't happen, and you suspend the investigating officer. I mean, that's what they do to UFOs. All the evidence is there. All the proof is there. Radar, sonar, eyewitness by pilots, military, governors, etc. But yet it's completely ignored. It makes absolute, and nobody gets upset about it. That there goes the Constitution, the First Amendment. Nobody gets upset about it.
Well, because for the most part, it doesn't affect people's lives.
Yeah.
It does, you know, to their knowledge, it doesn't affect their lives. If you're not an abductee, if you have not had a close encounter experience with a craft that's hovering right over your head, you know, silently, without wings and without engine noise, then it has not affected your life. So please tell me that the world is the same as Grandma told me it was, you know, and so I can go on with my life. And but you know, inadvertently, it does affect our lives. It affects all of our lives.
Well, it absolutely changes history.
It changes history.
And even you look at WikiLeaks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody had their backup that this guy shouldn't have breached our computers and the military, and you know. But then you start thinking about it, and they start putting out some of the information. You got all of this political history, all of this stuff coming out that we were never going to be told about. Information about the Middle East, you know, what the relationships there are. All of this good information kept from us. So why is that Gary McKinnon the bad guy?
Yeah.
And you know what? We really should do. Somebody should be pressing our government saying, if you're going to go after this guy, you need to first acknowledge that UFOs is a real phenomenon. Otherwise, you're prosecuting this kid for something that's not even real. It's fantasy.
Okay.
Why would you prosecute him because he went into your military computers to find ghosts and goblins and fairies and elves? Would you prosecute him? Think about it.
Now, you mentioned WikiLeaks, and that's different than Gary McKinnon.
I'm saying, why go after that guy?
Yeah.
You know, what did he do? If it's not a real phenomenon, yeah. And you know, I understand the part of what that they did wrong, but you know what? There's a lot there that falls under the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For those who are not familiar with Gary McKinnon, he's from England, who cracked into and didn't really hack into our military computers. The door was open, you know.
Yeah.
The door was open on a computer that wasn't locked. And he just, you know, it's like you leave your doors open and some guy wanders in and takes a look around. Doesn't steal anything, just looks to see what you have.
Yeah.
And what he found we had was UFOs. And
we have a fleet like Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, we have ships and stuff that when they were named, and then he went and Googled it in, you know, the Air Force, the Navy.
Mm.
Well, these ships, they don't exist, but yet he found them in our military computers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you go after somebody? If I got on my computer right now and went to the Department of Homeland Security and just started Googling elves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just every link I can get to was looking for, you know, elves. I mean, am I going to be prosecuted for that?
You know, think
about it. So unless somebody's going to come out and say that, well, the UFO phenomenon's real and he had no place being in our computer, you know, it's a fine. You know, the British government should fine him, give him, you know, whatever, 10 days in jail for a breach of whatever, and that's the end of it. You're not going to extradite this kid to the U.S. and put him in, you know, put him down in our prison there with the 9/11 people.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it's the same way when they threaten military personnel, when military personnel find out about UFOs or are involved with crash discs or whatever, you know, they threaten them. Don't ever say anything or we'll put you in a prison for the rest of your life and cut off your pension and yada, yada, mm-hmm. yada. Well, it's a hollow threat because, number one, if they were to put you in prison, when these military people come forward, and you can see it in the Disclosure Project and all of these other military personnel who are coming forward with their UFO stories, they're getting away with it. Why? Because if they put them in prison for giving away secrets, it's tantamount to saying, yeah, it's true, it's real, there are UFOs. And what the man is saying is absolutely true, and therefore he's giving away secrets and we got to put him in jail. Instead, they just laugh at him. Oh, no, that couldn't be. Go back to sleep, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it brings to mind the extraterrestrial exposure law. You familiar with that? It was a federal law, and I could give you the title number and everything. It was on the books for 20, it was either 21 or 19 years. But this is actually a federal law that says, it's called the Extraterrestrial Exposure Law. And it says explicitly, if you come into contact with an extraterrestrial or its craft, it doesn't say a meteor, extraterrestrial or its craft, you are not to make contact. It's almost like a hazardous material. You're supposed to leave the area, you know, don't touch it, notify the authorities. But if you do come into contact with it, that you're subject to a year in prison, a $5,000 fine, and quarantine without a hearing by NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a federal law. Can you imagine right now trying to get a federal law passed on prosecuting someone for talking to an elf or a fairy or a werewolf? Can you imagine that? That was a federal law. So, you know, what happened was somebody kind of just raised their hand after 20 years and said, hey, how many people have you prosecuted with this?
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else said, well, if we prosecute somebody, we're acknowledging it's real. And they struck it from the books.
That's right.
And that is an absolute true story. It's how we try to make something be what we want it to be, but then didn't think about the effects of whether you actually did arrest and prosecute somebody.
That's right. All these people coming forward and saying, I've been abducted by aliens. Why don't they arrest them? Why don't they fine them? Well, you know, they can't because they'd be admitting that it was real. So they were trying to scare the public into saying, if you're ever abducted, keep your mouth shut about it, right?
Absolutely.
So I got to tell
you. So, you know, then the question we get to, David, is what do you think the real truth is? What is so scary about it? What is it that's kept from us at all costs? I mean, this is above top secret, like the book that was written, right, by the guy over in England. What is it that's so horrible that can't be told to the people, you know?
Okay, you're going to give me the answer.
I think, in my opinion, I think we find that we were genetically engineered.
There you go. There you
go. It's not evolution.
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you tell people that? How do you tell them that, well, you know, they kind of came by, and when our, you know, we kind of showed this advance in our genes and our intelligence and extra genes, you know, put into us, well, it wasn't God, it was them,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And it really explains a lot of Greek and Roman mythology, a lot of the missing links. It makes more sense, actually. Mm-hmm. But you can't tell the average person that's where you came from.
No. No, they're not going to buy it until, like I say, it's not going to be disclosure. It's going to be allowing this information to come out until it becomes self-evident.
So, yeah.
I have to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves here in Dearborn, Michigan, out of Henry Ford Community College. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with John Ventra. John is an investigator and the state director for Pennsylvania. And I did want to also mention that Stephen Bassett, of the executive director of ParadigmResearchGroup.org, will launch a petition advocating UFO disclosure. The Obama administration will launch a people's petition process on its website at whitehouse.gov/we the people. You can do a Google News search on White House petition. Petitions receiving 5,000 signatures within 30 days will be reviewed by a White House panel for consideration by the administration. And this represents an opportunity for the UFO disclosure movement. When the We the People petition section goes active on the White House website, the Paradigm Research Group will immediately put up the disclosure petition. The wording for this petition is as follows. We, the undersigned, strongly urge the President of the United States to formally acknowledge an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race and immediately release into the public domain all files from all agencies and military services relevant to this phenomena. Now, you may sign the petition when it is active and check with paradigmresearchgroup.org for details, and worlddisclosureday.org. That's worlddisclosureday.org. Now, I want to thank Stephen Bassett of paradigmresearchgroup.org for bringing this petition to my attention, and I hope our listeners will sign it and something positive comes of it. What do you think of that, John?
Well, you know, that is absolutely unbelievable because I've been discussing with people of putting our own petitions out there, you know, for various, topics and subjects. Well, the one I was thinking, rather than saying, you know, this disclosure, I know what Bassett does, you know, was that we should release the, we should ask the FAA and the Air Force to release its personnel from their oaths of silence regarding UFOs.
Right.
And that's the petition I would push, just so all these people could come out, you know?
Well, be advised about, I don't know if you got a an email about that from Stephen Bassett.
No, I didn't. If you've got one, please forward it to me.
I'll do it. Yeah, it's whitehouse.gov/we the people, and go to paradigmresearchgroup.org and follow that along, because that petition will be up there. And sign it and pass that along to people. And, you know, if we can pass jokes along and dirty jokes along to people on the web, yeah, and in the email, we can certainly pass something as important as this. What do you think?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I would like you to send me if you have something. Otherwise, I'll Google it, you know.
Very good, yeah.
Hey, I also got to tell you, I got promoted.
To?
I'm an interim board member with MUFON now in Greeley, Colorado.
Yay, congratulations to you.
Yeah, thanks. So yeah, there's three of us that got added to the board, like in training, to see if we want to do it and if they want us, you know.
Yeah.
And there's three of us, and then, you know, when there's some retirements, they'll pick from those three to make them full-blooded board members.
So what are your responsibilities with MUFON now, including that position?
Well, right now, like you said, I had Pennsylvania, but I also have West Virginia and Delaware as their state directors. I got three states.
Oh, okay.
And with the board position, I'm in charge of membership. So I'm looking at some different things with membership. Like, we don't have an automatic renewal system, you know, if you use your credit card and you want it to automatically renew. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of things that we can do to help membership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're going to be a busy guy, huh?
Yeah, and I got about 6 months, 5.5 months, I can retire. So I got a full plate with this and a bunch of other things that I do outside of work. This is the fourth board I'm on now. MUFON makes board number four, so keeps me busy.
I was going to say, so when you do retire from your day job, your paying job, you've got a lot of, still have a lot of work, correct?
Yeah, there's a lot to keep me busy once I retire, and hopefully by then I'll be a full board member and be able to spend a lot more time helping MUFON.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a different subject, you also wrote a book called 12/21/2012, A Prophecy. Now, is that a work of fiction, or tell us about that?
Yeah, it's fiction, and you know what? I actually have to credit that book with getting me into ufology.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in the mid-90s, I used to watch this show called Sightings. And I ended up getting divorced. I had a lot of free time, and the company had me on a special project where I was traveling all around the country. So I just started, I felt like writing something. So I had these ideas about 2012, et cetera, and I started writing this book. But as I researched it and came across the Mayans and some of the other prophecies, they got you a little bit into the UFOs, talking about extraterrestrials, Coco Khan, et cetera. So really, this book, which I started in 1995 and published in 2007, was what got me into MUFON in 1998 when I joined MUFON. It was really because of this book and researching it that I got involved in ufology.
Very good. So you say that your book is a work of fiction?
Yeah, it's science fiction. I took the prophecies and then I set the world up the way I thought it would be in 2012, making a lot of my own predictions, of which about five of them actually came true. Do you know, when I wrote that book, which really, you know, you finish it in 06 and you send it to the publisher and it comes out in early 07, on page 12 it says the housing and financial markets in the U.S. will collapse in August of 2008. And it did. I mean, it was, and there's like five things in that book that I said and actually came true.
Now that's scary.
Yeah, it is. Because if a lot of the other things start to come true, these are the good times.
These are the good times, right.
Well, yeah.
I'm ashamed to admit that I have not read the book. I believe my wife has, and I'm going to have to.
Yeah. So. Well, the other one I wrote the day after 2012 is real. It's kind of a quick book. It's only 100 pages. And I'll tell you how I ended up doing that.
Who? The Diva.
The following.
You know, there you got it. There you got a perfect example 1,800 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say that the planet is on a cycle. The cycle lasts 25,800 years. And the interesting thing is it takes 25,800 years for our Earth to complete one cycle where you can, where, like, if you started looking at the sky 25,800 years ago, our view changes by 1 degree every 72 years because of the way the Earth wobbles and spins. It's not exact. But it takes 25,800 years to complete that entire rotation where you're back to looking at that same point in the sky. Because, you know, the sky that the Egyptians seen is different than the sky we see.
Right.
And, you know, what you saw 10,000 years ago was a different sky because of our rotation. But how did they know that? How did they know that?
I was going to say,
then,
how did they know?
They were Stone Age people. How did they know about that? How did they know there was a black hole in the center of the Milky Way galaxy? But they wrote that. How do they know that? And then all of a sudden, like you said, with Atlantis, et cetera, you go from these Stone Age people, and the next thing they're doing, mathematics, astronomy, building expansion bridges, doing dentistry, brain surgery. How did they do that? Where the year before, they were Stone Age people.
Have you ever said, or Zachariah Sitchin, or anybody ever said to the scientists, who have the straightforward worldview, how did they know that back then?
No, I really haven't encountered any. You know, and I kind of said to myself, sometimes I've gone to things at museums and stuff, and now you can ask questions. I should really hit them with a lot of the stuff that I know that will really, you know, trip them up.
Yeah, because mainstream science, I don't think, could have an answer for that, other than no, they didn't know that. That was a lucky guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, you watch some of these shows. Like, I think there's one on called The Universe and stuff. And I listen to some of the completely harebrained theories they throw out. Yeah. And, you know, the latest one is like how the moon developed. You know, first they said that the moon was a planet that actually hit the Earth. And they show it, like, in their simulation, where it's kind of like, you know, it's all a bunch of, it breaks up into a million pieces, but then it all comes back together again. Mm. Oh, and it's perfectly round. Isn't that something? Now they got another theory that it's actually two planets that hit and merge together and form this moon. That's why it's so big, and you know, and that's why the Earth is so dense. These are the stupidest theories I've ever heard in my life. If a planet hit this Earth, it would just, like, break it apart, and it wouldn't stay here and get bigger, you know?
Yeah, well, the asteroid belt between Mars and, help me here,
Mars. Jupiter, probably.
And Jupiter, yes. How could I forget that? Anyway, the asteroid belt is supposed to be, used to be a planet that was hit by Planet X or whatever, mm-hmm. and made this... this asteroid belt, there's nothing but asteroids that are flying around, pieces of debris. Why didn't it get back together?
Yeah, you know, that's there you got it. There you got a perfect example. If that was the same theory, why do we have an asteroid belt? I mean, it's... scientists put stuff out, and once they put it out, everybody just believes it, because when you have an authority figure tell you something,
that's
it's the truth.
That's
well, you know what? 30 years ago, 40 years ago, I had my tonsils out. 45 years ago. I want them back now, because they say you need your tonsils. But back then, they said you didn't need them.
Yeah, I had my tonsils out.
And now they tell you don't take them out.
But it was, you know, I had, it helped me physically. I think it helped everyone physically. They had what they call tonsillitis or chronic colds.
Temporarily.
Yeah, well, you know, what can I say?
But but it's like every couple of years the theories change, and, you know, what they said 10 years ago, now they say something different. They don't know anything. Right. And their theories are no different than, you know, I could say, you know, like I said, that you're, you know, this is genetic engineering. Intelligent design is genetic engineering of us. That's what it is.
I believe so.
I do
believe
too.
You're right. No, I'm not just saying it. I've, you know, if you've read my book, you know that... I believe that, and I have stated that. So.
Well, what we got to do is exchange books when you come out here to speak.
Hey, it sounds good to me.
Yeah, we'll just swap books.
Okay. And, I will definitely have my books, and I'm sure you'll have yours.
Yep.
And I hope to see our listeners out there, especially the ones in Pennsylvania. We got listeners out there in Pennsylvania, and come by... both October 15 and 16, and October 22nd, 23rd. One is the first one is in Philadelphia. Second one is in Youngwood, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right by Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so right by Pittsburgh. Yeah. So, what do you see as a future for MUFON, anyway?
Well, I think, you know, we're moving forward. We're doing our research. You know, I think we're in good shape. You know, there's been a little dissension there with few people, you know, kind of pointing fingers at us and stuff. But, you know, there's no merit to any of that. I actually attended one of their sessions, and their complaints had no merit at all. So, you know, MUFON's a very upstanding, you know, organization. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be around, and with these new board members, they're planning for the future, because some five of our board members are over 70. I think two of them are over 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're planning to replace board members, and I think we're in good shape. I think there's a lot more we can do to get the word out, etc. So, you know, I think MUFON's in great shape.
Yeah, MUFON has outlasted all the other UFO... you know, groups that have sprung up over the years. And so I think that kind of like America, you know, we've outlasted every other country. And,
yeah.
we have
the brand recognition and the name and clout with 3,000 members.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we got to use that a little bit more. Because one of the things with these small groups, like when people get all upset, well, I'm going to join this other group. Well, join the other group. You got... you know, 10 people that are members with you. You got no clout. You don't get any cases. I mean, MUFON has our, you know, our CMS system, mm-hmm. where you go online, you put your case in. We got 1,000 cases last month, 1,000 investigations across
wow.
the country. You know, these other groups don't get that. You may get a local person tell you about something,
yeah.
but, you know, you got to belong to MUFON if you want to do an investigation. And, you know, I think we can use our clout a little bit more in asking for stuff. And if we get involved in these polls and petitions, you know, you got 3,000 people right there.
Right. Where can our listeners go to find out more about Pennsylvania MUFON?
Yeah, it's very simple. You go to MUFONPA.com. and you'll see both our conferences, and there's different information on there and how to put an investigation in and how to join MUFON. It'll take you right to the main page of MUFON. So it's very simple, MUFONPA.com. And if you're interested in my books, it's JohnVentry.com.
Very good. John Ventry, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope we can do this again sometime. And I am looking forward to seeing you in Pennsylvania October the 25th or 22nd.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I look forward to seeing you.
Very good. And you have a good evening.
All right, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. Stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, it's Dave Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Taylor, WHFR, Dearborn.
This is an official station of the MAEB. The Michigan Association of Educational Broadcasters was formed in 1977 to support your local high school and college radio stations. These stations serve the community and create alternative programming. But most importantly, they discover and train the next generation of broadcasters. For more information on the MAEB and its affiliates, visit www.maeb.org.
Tuesday, October 11th, WHFR will be part of College Radio Day. WHFR will be one of over 200 college and high school radio stations from all over North America participating in this first annual College Radio Day. WHFR on College Radio Day will be playing testimonials from WHFR listeners about the importance of college radio and WHFR in particular. If you would like to record a testimonial about the importance of WHFR and college radio in your life, please leave a message at 313-317-6579 by midnight, Monday, October 3rd. Or you can email your testimonial to whfr@hfcc.edu. Again, if you would like to leave a testimonial about WHFR, call 313-317-6579 or email whfr@hfcc.edu. Help WHFR celebrate College Radio Day by leaving your testimonial today. And then listen on Tuesday, October 11th to College Radio Day on WHFR, the station making waves.
My name is Jamali Rashears, and this is how I live United. Education has been so important in my life, but lots of kids in my community don't have the same opportunities. I'm an advocate and fundraiser for my local United Way. I help promote academic achievement and give kids a reason to stay in school. We also put together events to raise funds and bring our message to the kids that need to hear it most. My name is Jamali Rashears. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United.